Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by C.W.B. and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 27. Mena. If. Summary. John and Sherlock have a plan to come up with a plan. John hustles Sherlock away from the swimming hole faster than Sherlock can say seal tooth. Lustra calls after them, asking if they're going to finish the game or not. John calls back over his shoulder, decompression sickness, have to run, keep playing without us. Sherlock spits the tooth out and bounces it from wing to wing until John hisses at him to put it away before someone sees it. He tucks it up high under his wing, but not using that wing for balance causes him to move with an awkward gait, so John wraps a wing around him to help him along. He probably looks a bit bia-bia, he thinks. That makes him giggle, which causes John to huff and ask him what exactly he finds so amusing about the situation.
Nothing. Just, if we want to explain why I'm walking like this, you can just tell everyone I've had too much wai-wai-ha. Please, the last thing we need is for you to start drinking strong water. Your brain is magnificent, Sherlock. Let's not try fermenting it.
He tugs Sherlock along with increasing urgency, and it dawns on Sherlock that John is quite keyed up. Sherlock feels a flush spread under his feathers at John's praise of his brain, wonders if his Ippo can feel that heat where he's pressed along Sherlock's side. Then he realizes that a good part of that warmth is actually coming from John, and that realization makes him fear for his own combustion. As they pass some of the elders, John smiles and waves and passes little comments such as, "Lovely day," and "Hello, Elder Hadi, nice to see you," and "Great silverfish the other day, Elder Pavo, delicious." Thaddy is practically yelling out these greetings as he half-drags Sherlock, both of them slipping and stumbling, does not seem to alarm anyone. They make their way to a secluded alcove beyond the curve of the berg, leading away from the council grounds, and John backs Sherlock up against the ice wall, takes his face between the tips of his wings. He bumps and rubs their bills together while Sherlock tries to speak, but John isn't coming up for air except to mumble utterances of praise and awe.
Bloody genius! Incredible! Cannot believe! So amazing! How did you know? Fantastic! Tell me everything!
Sherlock goes weak in the knees from all the attention being lavished on him, lifts his wings to pull John closer. The tooth clatters down between their feet, and they pause, look down, and then look back to each other.
That's going to be a problem, Sherlock says, ducking down to pick up the totem. Tell me everything, Sherlock. How on earth did you find it down there?
Sherlock tucks the tooth up under his wing again, starts at the beginning. He tells John about his equation to plot the ice chip's trajectory, and how long he waited before diving deeper, and what the keel looked like that far down. By the time he's explaining the carefully rolled seaweed and his attempts to loosen it, John is waddle-pacing back and forth in front of him, a barely contained bundle of excitement, nervous energy, and agitation.
She's going to go back to check on it, Sherlock. She probably checks every day, maybe several times a day. As soon as she realizes it's gone, she'll come after us. I know, John Ling. I should have rewrapped the seaweed and tucked it back into the crevice, but I dropped it when I went after the tooth. I needed air and I wasn't thinking clearly. No, it's okay. I'm not saying you should have done that. Maybe we can sneak back down and tuck some into the same place. But we need to find another strand.
Adesitus has some.
He does, but he'll want to know why we need it.
Sherlock stops John before they get too involved in a plan to take Cetus's seaweed.
John, listen. She'll realize it's gone soon enough, no matter how we try to hide it. We need to find out what to do with the tooth right now. My father will be back in 3 days, and we will either have to tell him we have it or we won't. We need to figure out if we should tell Erebus and Mycroft too.
John stares at him, all perplexion and worry on his precious face.
Not tell them? John, this is the tooth. We have the tooth. Once two other pangs know we have it, no matter how much we trust them, opinion on what to do with it doubles. We need to decide, just you and I, what we want to do. How are we going to use it? Okay, right. Yeah.
Sherlock pulls John closer and looks him right in the eye.
If the legend is true, we can do anything, John. If this is Porangi's tooth and contains the power of a god, we have a connection to Ika himself and to Korora.
We can save them. We can save her and Pono, and maybe we can bring Amarire back. If we can bring Amarire back, we can overcome the apologists and we can be together without anyone trying to stop us.
Bring Amarire back, be together, yes. But Sherlock, we have to find the Heartstone. We can't do any of that without the Heartstone.
And how do we find the Heartstone?
With the tooth.
Right.
But Sherlock, won't we have a better chance at finding the Heartstone if we have others helping us? What do you think Erebus or Mycroft would do with it if they had it? Wouldn't they want the same thing, to fulfill the promise?
Sherlock looks over John's shoulder at the way the slowly graying sky is seeping down from up high, as if to touch the water, to rest on it for the night. Soon he won't be able to see where either one meets the horizon.
John, only one Peng can use the tooth's power. We can't break it up and share it.
John blinks at him, slowly at first, and then faster, and his brow draws down between his eyes, which are beginning to squint.
Oh, no, no, you are not doing this alone, Sherlock. No, I don't care how we manage it, but you are not doing this on your own. Do you hear me?
Yes, yes, I hear you. I do, John. But please, for now, let's not say anything to the others. At least for tonight. Not until we figure out how we want to proceed. Let's know what we want to do first. Can we do that?
I suppose. So how would you proceed? Do we have a plan for finding the Heartstone?
Sherlock shakes his head. Not really.
I mean, I'm holding the tooth, and you've had it before. I don't feel any different. Did you?
John shakes his head.
Maybe we have to do something to make it work?
Sherlock wriggles so the tooth slips down his side, then he balances it on his wing. They both look at it.
I can see now how that's a star and not a snowflake, John says, leaning low to get a better look. Maybe the star does something.
Let's not mess with it until we know what we want to do. In the meantime, we have to make sure Moringa doesn't swim tonight. It's probably time for dinner, but maybe we can offer to bring her something, or try to direct everyone to a different place to forage.
Good idea. But how are you going to hunt with that under your wing?
Sherlock considers, and then says,
I'll keep it in my mouth the whole time. Can you catch something for me? I'll transfer it back to my wing in order to eat. Or we can take turns in the water. I'll hold it while you swim, then you hold it while I swim.
John nods. Okay, either of those should work. Sherlock slips the tooth under his wing and practices walking more naturally. He has a limited range of motion with that wing, but at least he can move it a bit. John stays close to that side, which no one will find suspicious, and they head back toward the council grounds. Almost everyone is there when they return, but no one is paying attention to them. They've gathered around Cetus, who is attending to a prone Peng.
What's going on? John asks as they approach.
They join the circle gathered around Cetus and try to peer over Malling and Irina's shoulders.
Moringa hurt her foot, Malling whispers, loud enough for Pangs on the next berg to hear.
It's not really a secret, Malling, Irina says, keeping her eyes locked on the scene in front of them.
Sorry, I just didn't want to disturb Cetus.
Try not yelling. Try not to be rude, Irina.
Sherlock and John roll their eyes at each other and wriggle over to stand behind Anthea and Janine.
How did she do it?
Sherlock murmurs into Janine's ear. Janine jumps half her height in the air and squeaks.
Ha! You scared me! Sure, you can't just go around sneaking up on pings like that.
Sure?
John leans in a bit and cocks his head at her.
I didn't intend to scare you, Janine. How did Moringa hurt herself?
John turns to Sherlock now and licks his bill.
Sherl?
Sherlock shrugs.
She slipped and fell, she said.
Sherlock looks over Janine's shoulder at where Cetus is binding her foot with some sort of seaweed.
John Morling Stamford, come closer, now that you're here.
Cetus makes room for his apprentices near Moringa's side.
I want you to watch how I bind her ankle with this rimuraba.
The three pangs shuffle closer. Moringa shoots them all a look of complete contempt.
Not too close, Tamariki. I'm in pain enough without one of you clumsy juveniles bumping into my foot.
Sherlock suppresses an urge to belly flop on top of the cranky old bird and steps into the space Stamford has vacated, next to Lestra. Lestra nods at him, and he goes back to watching Cetus wrap the seaweed around Moringa's foot.
We've talked about walrus kelp before, but now you get a chance to see how well this strong, flexible sea plant works for this type of injury.
Cetus keeps talking, but Sherlock's mind drifts as he puts together the disparate pieces of this new puzzle. Penguins fall all the time, he thinks, but they rarely get hurt, padded as they are with layers of feathers and insulating fat. Penguins slip and fall and skid and flop and bump and bounce and clatter, and they almost always pop right back up and keep going. So, he infers, Moringa must have fallen from quite a height to have hurt her foot like that. He turns and looks up at Cassiopeia's peak, then tracks lower to the ice cave. He can see a sliver of its window from where he stands. He and John aren't allowed up there anymore without a chaperone, but is that to keep them from the temptations inherent in such a private place, or to keep them away from something else? What was Moringa doing in the ice cave? Or was she somewhere else? Are there other places on the berg that she would have tried to reach? Why?
The pockets in the leaf allow air to flow, and the entire plant is very rich in minerals and aconites, which will help heal the broken skin and reduce the swelling.
Cetus is almost done with his instruction, and the group will break up soon. Sherlock doesn't have to worry about keeping Moringa out of the water tonight, but his mind is already spinning around bigger concerns. Moringa is keeping more than one secret, and he wants to know what it is. No, he corrects himself. He needs to know what it is. Notes. Maori translations. Mena, if. Waiwaiha, alcohol. Ipo, boyfriend, sweetheart, significant other.
Ha!
Hey! Oh, what? An expression of surprise.
Rurimuraba,
bull kelp.
Dervilliae antarctica.
Tamariki, children, normally used only in the plural. Author's note, I found this fascinating, but you may not.
Dervilliae antarctica, bull kelp, is rich in iodine, salt minerals, selenium, zinc, magnesium, and calcium, and is an effective antioxidant. As a food or dietary supplement, it is able to prevent heart and kidney problems, slow aging and cellular degeneration, and combats high cholesterol levels. Many cultures in South America make use of Dervilliae antarctica in their cuisine. In Peru, it is widely used as an accompaniment to ceviche and is a primary component of a broth soup called chilcano. In Chile, it is used in many different recipes like salads and stews. Its primary market now is for alginates, particularly in China. A quick note. To everyone who sends me pang pics via Tumblr, thank you. There are a few that I've meant to post here, but I keep forgetting. I do see them, and I do love them.